It's Border Crossings with Larry London from VOA Music Mix.
Hi, this is Larry London, and welcome again to Border Crossings. We have a great program for you, and today it's a man that is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame not once, but twice. Once as a member of the Hollies, and the second time as Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. It is none other than Graham Nash, and he is here today to talk about an exciting new project for Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young fans. So hang around for Border Crossings with Graham Nash, coming your way next.
Looking at the world through the sunset in your eyes, train through clear Moroccan skies. Ducks and pigs and chickens call, animal carpet wall to wall. American ladies 5 foot tall and blue, sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind. Had to get away to see what we could find. Hope the days that lie ahead bring us back to where they've led. Listen not to what's been said to you. Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board the train. All on board the train.
I've been saving all my money just to take you there. I smell the garden in your hair.
Casablanca going south, blowing smoke rings from the corners of my mouth. Gold cups hang in the air, charming cobras in the square. Stripes your leathers we can wear at home.
Well, let me hear you now.
Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? But you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express. They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board the train. All on board the train. All on
Welcome to Border Crossings. My name's Larry London. Today on our show, we have a true music legend, a man who, along with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and the Hollies, has been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. We'd like to welcome to our show, live via satellite from New York, the legendary Graham Nash. Nice to have you, Graham.
You too, Larry. How have you been?
Well, I've been fine. And the real question is, how have you been? I mean, touring as extensively as you often do every year, you never seem to slow down.
I don't know the meaning of the word slow down. You know, my father was dead at 46, and I've lived every second since trying to fill my life with the best stuff possible. And I do a lot, you know, but that's what I do. I try and, you know, express my feelings and communicate with people and make contact with people and make sure that they know that they're valuable in my life.
As a legendary musician such as yourself, whose career has spanned five decades. I mean, when you stop and think about that and you look back 50 years of making music, has it gone by quickly, 50 years?
Insanely fast. I keep trying to tell my kids just how fast it gets, and it seems to be that, you know, the older you get, the faster time moves. I remember when I was a kid, you know, when you were, you know, having a summer break at school, it was like a year or something. Mm-hmm. And now it goes by in the blink of an eye.
Now, you mentioned school, so I have an interesting question. How does someone who left school at 13 end up with four college degrees?
I'm a very curious man. I've always been curious about the world. I want to know how the world works on every single level, from, you know, from human beings to, you know, the vast, you know, universe that we live in. Mm. I'm a curious man. I always have been. Mm.
Well, not only, you know, the degrees, which I say in light, but you also have been now given the honor of Order of the British Empire. which is quite a prestigious honor. And how did you, I mean, when were you told of that wonderful news?
I was actually in my kitchen in my house in Los Angeles, and the phone rang, and this lady said, Mr. Nash, and I said, yes, because, you know, when my private phone rings, you know, nobody calls me Mr. Nash, right? So she said, are you sitting down? I said, actually, no, I'm standing up in my kitchen. Who is this? She said, my name is Dame Barbara, and Her Majesty the Queen wants to make you an officer of the British Empire. So, of course, I immediately thought it was Crosby trying to screw with me. And I asked her that. I said, did Crosby put you up to this? I mean, and she said, no, we're quite serious. The Queen would like to honor you. And it was indeed a great honor. There are many people, of course, who think that royalty and kings and queens is a thing of the past and shouldn't exist. But when I was standing in front of Her Majesty, I realized that she had the genetic information of 1,000 years of English kings and queens. Hmm. And I kept thinking about how my mother and father would react if they saw me in Buckingham Palace talking to the Queen about the Hollies.
Now, you have written so many hit records with the Hollies and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And so how does someone who's so famous and popular in England with the Hollies, as you were, make a decision to come to America and join an American pop band?
It was very easy for me. I've been a harmony freak all my life. You know, the Buffalo Springfield and the Hollies and the Byrds were good harmony bands. But when I heard me and David and Stephen blend our voices together, it was a completely unique sound. And it was a sound, and as soon as we heard it, all three of us at the same time realized that, one, we had great music to make, and two, that we would probably have to be friends for the rest of our lives.
And I understand the introduction to David Crosby actually was made by another very famous American musician.
Yes, Mama Cass Elliott. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that Cass understood, because she knew David and Stephen, you know, because they were all, you know, working in the same kind of industry in Los Angeles, especially in Laurel Canyon. I have a feeling, because Cass knew that I was unhappy with the Hollies, she immediately went, wait a second, if those three guys sang together, that would be an interesting sound. So I really owe everything to Mama Cass.
And why do you continue to work as hard as you do these days? Is it the love of the fans, the love of just making music? What is it that kind of motivates you to keep on going?
The thing that motivates me is that I love life. And the strangest things happen to me, and they always have all my life. And mm-hmm. and I've been witness to a lot of interesting things. Mm-hmm. I don't demand of the universe, but I encourage the universe to show me magic things every single day.
Do you have a favorite part of this business? I mean, is it the writing? Is it the performing?
I think it's the moment of creation. Mm-hmm. When you're creating a photograph or creating a song, it's that moment of creation that I'm not so sure what that is. I don't know any songwriter that can tell anybody what that process is. I mean, I know what I do physically. I see something that affects me. I see something that affects my mind. I see something that affects my heart. And I have to say something about it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why I'm very proud to be an American citizen for all these 30-odd years. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a part of this country. This is an incredible country. Yes, it has its problems, but it has its magic also, and I tend to concentrate on the magic part of life.
Now, when you sit down and write a song, is there something about the song that tells you, I've got something here, this is going to be a hit? You've written Carrie Anne, you wrote, you know, Our House, you wrote so many mega hits for the groups that you've been with. Is there something that jumps off the paper and says, you know, this is going to be a hit?
Yeah, I don't ever want to waste anyone's time, especially my own. I don't have much time left. Obviously, I'm 72 years old now. How long can this go on, really, physically? I don't want to waste anyone's time. And if a song gets it past me, I'm probably my most severe critic. If a song that I create gets past me, I stand a good chance of turning you on. You know, I stand a good chance of enabling you to think about things you may not have thought about, how much you should appreciate your partner and your family and your children. I know when I have something. I do.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for
Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
You have stated that the newest project that you're involved with, CSNY 1974, was your hardest work. That's an interesting statement to make.
Yes. Technically, it was my most difficult project. Mm. What we wanted to do was to present the listener and our fans and our new fans with a great concert. But the tapes were recorded in different environments, different sonic environments, different echo. And I wanted to make sure that your brain did not have to think about, wait a second, that sounds different than the last track. You know, I wanted it to be a seamless experience of a great Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young concert.
And there's 40 songs on the new DVD, CD set, and I understand there's a book with photographs as well.
188 pages.
Wow, that's fantastic. And people can get that online, Amazon, iTunes, wherever you can buy DVDs and CDs, and I'm sure you want to get
this. We even made a special disc for Starbucks, too.
Oh.
It's very interesting. I love to drink a coffee in the morning, and to go into Starbucks and hear my music being played and see the record for sale, it's kind of interesting.
Well, it's CSNY 1974. And I understand it took 3 or so months of filming to put this together?
4.5 years.
4.5 years? Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And how many shows does this include throughout the DVDs? Because these are stadium performances.
Yeah, we did 31 shows. It was the first tour of its time. The Beatles had obviously done Shea Stadium, and the Rolling Stones had done some interesting large audience shows in Hyde Park in London. But this was the first tour of those kind of places. A fascinating time. Lots of great music, lots of great experiences. But the most important part, of course, was the music.
Yeah, and you talk about excess. We will be touching on your autobiography, which is called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life, which I'm sure you have many wild tales that are told, and some that you probably left out of the book for good reason.
There's a lot I left out of the book, but it is a very interesting document. I've never been a man to really look backwards at my life. There's not much you can do about the past. But in having to write this book, I began to realize, I got to the end of the first draft of the manuscript, and I looked down at it and I said, oh my God, I wish I was him. Because it seemed like somebody had written this life. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody with a crazy imagination had written this life. And I realized that was the life that I've been leading for the last 70 years.
And what was it that drew you to music, Graham? Was it, a lot of rock and roll guitarists say the girls, to get the girls. But you were 13 at the time, so.
I know, but I think anyone that tells you that they got into rock and roll for any other reason than to get women is probably lying to you. But I got turned on to early American rock and roll. Mm-hmm. There was a broadcast that used to reach the north of England from Luxembourg in Europe. It was called Radio Luxembourg. And on a Sunday night, they had the American Top 40. And we couldn't afford two radios. So I had to put my ear to the bedpost of my bed to be able to listen to my parents listening to American rock and roll. And so, the Everly Brothers and Buddy Holly and early Elvis and Fats Domino and Jerry Lee Lewis and Gene Vincent, all those great rock and rollers came into my life at a point when I was open to new experiences. Mm. I've been a musician since I was 13 years old.
And you also participated in several Buddy Holly tribute concerts. I'm sure Buddy Holly played a large role in developing your music interests and career.
I remember the day that Buddy died, and he actually died on my birthday, which was early February in 1959. Very sad time for me and Alan Clark, who was my partner in the Hollies. I mean, we called ourselves the Hollies, for God's sake,
Right.
And 50 years to the day, I was playing in the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa, which is the last place that Buddy played. And I was very proud to be there. a lot of interesting concerts in my early life. Bill Haley came to Manchester, which turned me on immensely. The Everly Brothers came to Manchester. Charlie Gracie, a well-known rockabilly singer from America, came to Manchester. And all these concerts really fired my imagination, and that's what I wanted to be. And so I began to pull myself towards my dream. And the way that I did it was I would draw stage setups instead of doing my homework. I practiced my autograph when I was 13, knowing full well that I would need a good autograph.
So you mentioned, you know, the different concerts and the tours that you've been on over the years, and I'm sure you've lost count by this point, but you've played stadiums, you've played Hyde Park, you've performed before hundreds of thousands of people, and you've probably performed in intimate settings as well. Do you have a preference?
I like smaller venues. I like to be able to see people's eyes. Mm-hmm. I need to know that we are connecting with them, that they are part of what we're doing. The three of us, and sometimes the four of us, are human beings with our own weaknesses and our own strengths, and we tend to concentrate on our strengths. It used to be that we concentrated on our weaknesses, which is what happens when you get, you know, three or four massive egos trying to vie for attention. But I think I like the smaller places, mm-hmm. because I can really see the people. When you're playing to 80,000 people, you know, the front row is probably 50 yards away. And you can't really see their eyes and knowing that you're actually connecting with them. Mm-hmm. That's what I like to do. I like to connect with people.
Now, the key to success for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young has been the harmonies. What has been the key to the longevity? What is it that's kept you guys together this long? Because it's not easy to keep a relationship going as long as you guys have.
That's true. It's not easy to keep a relationship going that long. But I must tell you that the thing that keeps us together is the music. And as long as we can sing, and as long as we are creating new songs that turn people on, that, you know, make them think about things that they may not have thought about, that make them fall back in love with their partners, that's what keeps us alive. Mm-hmm. I have 26 new songs. We're doing, I think, 6 new songs, you know, a couple from David, a couple from Stephen, and 2 or 3 from me in our new show. And it's those songs that keep us alive. It's the new stuff that keeps us alive. We know that we have a responsibility to play the old stuff that people love, you know, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes and Our House and Guinevere, etc. But it's the new stuff that keeps us alive, mm-hmm. and it's the music that keeps us together.
It's getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore.
I am sorry.
Sometimes it hurts so badly, I must cry out loud.
I am lonely.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
Give back it
hard. Remember what we've said and done and felt about each other. Don't let the past remind us of what we are not now.
I am not dreaming.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
You make it hard.
Tearing yourself away from me now, you are free, and I am crying. This does not mean I don't love you, I do, that's forever, yes, and for always.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
You make it
hard. Something inside is telling me that I've got your secret.
Are you still listening?
Here is the lock and left of the key to your heart.
And I love you.
I am yours,
You are mine, you are what you are. You make it hard, and you make it hard, and you make it hard.
Chestnut, brown, canary, ruby-throated sparrow, sing the song, don't be long, thrill me to the marrow. Voices of the angel ring around the moonlight, asking me, say, she's so free, how can you catch the sparrow? Lacy, lilting lyric, losing love, lamenté. Change my life, make it right, be my lady.
So many people have been touched by your music. with the Hollies and also with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And so you've had a chance to watch your fans grow up with you and age with you. And probably now you have more generations of their family as your fans too.
I must tell you that it's an incredible compliment as an artist to see people in the audience that were born after we did all that stuff. You know, 12-year-old people singing the words to our songs. I mean, it's an incredible compliment because let's get real here. We're not Johnny Depp. You know, we're not Brad Pitt here. So it must be the music that is attracting these fans. Mm-hmm. And I think the process of parents turning their children onto to good music and their children turning their children onto good music is why we have a demographic that's usually between 12 and 70. That's a good age spread.
That's a broad range. And I know you've also kept yourself very contemporary by some of the things you've connected yourself with. American Idol. You were on American Idol helping out a number of years ago.
I did. And you know, I'm not a big fan of those kind of television programs. I think a lot of it is bread and circuses to a large degree. But when I heard that American Idol had a charity arm to their organization that was helping kids in the inner cities to realize their dreams, when I heard that, I thought, I could help this out. And so I did teach your children probably in front of several million people with a young singer called Brooke White. Mm-hmm. Very pretty girl, by the way.
Yeah, I remember Brooke, blonde, beautiful girl. Now,
that's right.
See, you have experienced so many different things, and you've been a part of the evolution of rock from, you know, its early days, not from the very beginning, although you grew up with Gene Vincent and Bill Haley. But what are your thoughts about music today? When you listen to what's on the radio, when you listen to what the kids are listening to, what's Graham Nash thinking?
That I wish more musicians would talk about more topics that are real. This is a very difficult life to lead. It seems to be getting crazier by the second. I think that the people that own the world's media, you could count on two hands. And they don't want so-called protest music on their airwaves. They just don't want it. I remember after 9/11, I was just looking out the window here in New York, and I can see the Freedom Tower. And I realized that there were companies that made a list of 100 songs that their radio stations could not play. And the number one song that they were not allowed to play after 9/11 was Imagine by John Lennon. Can you imagine that? Why is Imagine such a threatening song that they would make it number one of the songs you could not play? So my point is that they really want sheep. They want the public to just lie down so that they can sell them another pair of sneakers and another soft drink and just lie down and don't say anything while we rob you. Hmm. I think to a large degree that's what's going on in this country, probably worldwide too.
And the process of recording has changed considerably from the days when you could record in a studio. You had to be in a studio, and now you can kind of phone it in. You can be in different rooms in different countries, and through computers you can put it all together. I mean, which way do you prefer?
I like to get a song down immediately. I like to, you know, show the band, or if it's solo, I want to know my song and get it down as quickly as possible. I think that when you do take after take after take after take, it sort of drains the original energy out of it. I'm a great believer in first takes. I want to get it down immediately with all the passion that I can. When you do take after take after take on what, you know, I first started making records and it was on 2-track, and now you can have 1,000 tracks if you want. But no amount of technology can make a bad song into a good song. Mm. I think technology can help a good song to become better and more connective to the people, but you can't make a bad song a good song with technology.
Mm. I want to dig a little deeper into the man now, Graham Nash, because you have a lot of interesting things that make Graham Nash who he is. One of those is you've always been very socially concerned with what's going on in the world. Not only in America and back home in Britain, but in the world in general. And the Hollies came up at a time that the Vietnam War was going on, and right now we're facing all kinds of political unrest around the world. I know you've been involved with different foundations. In the 70s, you were behind Energy. You created a Save Energy charity foundation. And where are you at today? Because I know you're donating money from the sale of this new DVD CD. You're donating a dollar to a charity cause. It doesn't say, I couldn't find what charity. So where are you at today?
We get asked a lot to do benefits. And one has to prioritize your time, because time is the only currency that we have. Even Bill Gates can't buy a second of time. Having said that, you have to figure out what is important to you. And what is important to me is the fact that maybe children are 25, 30% of our population, but they're 100% of our future. So I've always tried to concentrate on children's education and the way that we're treating and teaching our children. Having said that, you know, with James Taylor and Bonnie Raitt and Jackson Browne here in New York City in the late 70s did the No Nukes concerts, because we're very anti-nuclear power and the radiation and the poisoning that it all brings with it. And, you know, a prime example is Fukushima right now in Japan, which is pouring radiation into the Pacific Ocean at an alarming rate. But right now, I'm really interested in the state of our ocean. I think the acidification of the ocean, I think the pollution of the ocean with plastics, I think the overfishing, I think the ocean and the state of the ocean is going to be a very, very important part of our of my energy in the next couple of years.
Mm. I think it's wonderful that you have taken your fame and you've used it to help make the world a better place. So, you know, thank you, for doing that. I mean, on behalf of those that have supported you and those fans of your music, you know, all I can say is thank you for all your efforts on that.
I'm a very selfish man.
Yeah.
I want the world to be a better place for me. I want the world to be a better place for my wife and my family and my kids and my grandchildren and therefore everybody else. Mm-hmm. I'm a selfish man and I know it.
Just a song before I go, to whom it may concern. Traveling twice the speed of sound, it's easy to get burned. When the shows were over, we had to get back home. And when we opened up the door, I had to be alone. She helped me with my suitcase. She stands before my eyes, driving me to the airport and to the friendly skies. Going through security, I held her for so long. She finally looked at me in love and she was gone. Just a song before I go, a lesson to be learned. Traveling twice the speed of sound, it's easy to get burned. Envy all the dancers who have all the nerve.
your children to get into music as well, like to take the same path that you've taken?
I have never taught my children that way, by telling them what to do. I don't think you can tell kids what to do, mm-hmm. because I think they react negatively to that kind of input. I've taught my children by the example of who I am as a person, mm-hmm. how I deal with people, how I deal with adversity, how I deal with joy. They have watched me all their lives dealing with my life. And you know, my life has been a very interesting one. As you mentioned, you know, in Wild Tales, there's many, many stories about my interaction with people. So I've taught my children only by example. And I think that's one of the only ways that you can truly teach your children. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. I mean, what advice do you have for young people who want to be in music, for, you know, young people in general? If you go speak to a group of university students, what is it that Graham Nash tells them? What's the message?
Two things. I think you should get as much information as possible about the world and the workings of the world and what's going on in the world. And secondly, and most importantly, you have to follow your heart. Everybody out there has a very decent person inside them. I think if you concentrate on that good person inside you and follow your heart, you won't go much wrong.
So, you know, I want to ask about your collaborations, if I can. You've worked with A-ha. This is apart from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. You've worked with A-ha. You did something with David Gilmour. Is there anyone on your wish list that you haven't worked with that you'd like to work with?
In my opinion, Bob Dylan is America and probably the world's finest poet, and in my personal opinion, our finest singer. I'd like to work with Bob, but I'm kind of hesitant because Crosby sang with Bob, you know, maybe about 10, 15 years ago. And normally what you do is you hear a song, you want to rehearse the song and you want to get your part down and you want to shine and help the person express himself the best way you can. But when David said to Bob, you know, what song are we doing? And Bob told him the song. He said, well, can I hear it? And Bob said, oh, no, let's just do it. Mm-hmm. And David said, wait a second. You mean do it now and I've never heard the song? And Bob said, yeah. Hmm. So it's kind of daunting, but I'd like to work with Bob Dylan.
I'm sure that could happen with your name. All you have to do is say you want. Maybe Bob, if you're watching right now, Graham Nash, give him a call. He'd love to work with you. I'm Larry London. This is Border Crossings. We have Graham Nash with us in the studio in New York City. And we're talking about the brand new CD that was just released in July, CSNY 1974. For any fan of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, this is a must-have. And it comes with, as I mentioned earlier, 40 songs and 188 pages in a book. It comes with a DVD with never-before-seen footage of the band backstage and in concert. Absolutely, this is a cherished item. And it's about time. You know, it's about time, Graham, that you guys put something like this out.
Yeah, I had a great time doing this. Me and my fellow producer Joel Bernstein and our incredible engineer Stanley Johnson decided that we would start by finding the best performance of every single song. If a performance touched my heart, it made it to the list. If it didn't, it didn't make it. One specific example is Carry On, which is a Stephen Stills song and a very well-known Stephen Stills song. I couldn't for the life of me find a great take of Carry On. We set a very high bar for the music on this record. Like I said, I wanted the best performance of each song. And I could not find a Carry On that satisfied me. And so now I have to call Stephen and tell him. And he was a mensch. He was a man about it. Because he said to me, Willie, he said, if you can't find it, it's probably not there. And instead of giving me, you know, a bunch of guff about that's my song and I demand that it's be on there, he was a man about it. And he realized that, I realized that he trusted me implicitly with his music. Because David and Stephen and Neil trust me. They know I'm a democratic person. They know I want equal number of songs. They know I want the best performance. They know I want the best from us. And one of the difficult things we were talking about, difficulty in making this record, was the fact that I was producing this record, but I was also one of them. Mm. And so I had to have this dichotomy in my mind of being the producer, but also being one of the people I was producing. It was a very interesting process.
Mm. Well, I know that your fans are excited to have this. And I have two questions in closing. The first one is, these are sent in from different viewers, listeners of our program, when I mentioned that you were going to be on the show. The first one is in relation to Battle of the Bands. I'm sure you've heard of that concept. Radio stations have done that for years, Battle of the Bands. The Hollies at their peak, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Young at their peak. Who wins in Battle of the Bands?
They have different energies. One of the things that I would love to do, and once again, as we talk about when you dream and you pull yourself towards this dream, I would like to do a show where the first half of the show is the Buffalo Springfield, the Birds, and the Hollies. Then we take an intermission, and then we come back as CSNY, showing people exactly where these four people came from. That would be an interesting show to me. So Battle of the Bands, I wouldn't do a Battle of the Bands, but there would be an incredible amount of good music to be made.
I would definitely buy tickets to see that. Absolutely.
Me too.
And the final question that I have for you relates to your career as a whole. Looking back, people want to know what the highlight would be. If you could single out a moment or an event that stands out above the rest, because you've been doing this for, as I say, 5 decades, so it's probably hard to pinpoint a moment, but I have to ask.
It is very difficult, because I've led a very interesting life. But it stretches all the way from the very first time I ever heard the Hollies on the radio, back in 1963, to singing Happy Birthday to Bill Clinton on the lawn of the White House, to meeting Her Majesty the Queen and being honored by her, to listening to somebody call me on the phone saying that they were in Kathmandu, and listening to teacher children on the radio of this funky little cafe that they were in, knowing that my music has transcended the world. I've had many, many great moments in my life, and the next great moment will happen as soon as I finish this interview, I'm sure.
Okay, well, hopefully this interview will be a part of those great moments in your life.
Well, I came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, "Tell me, where are you going?" Mister told me, said, "I'm going down to Yester's Farm, gonna join in a rock and roll band. Got to get back to the land, set my soul free. We are Scotland. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Graham Nash, for being on the show today. You truly are an inspiration. You're a role model, an icon. You've touched so many. The Voice of America is thrilled to have you on. We're reaching millions in many countries around the world who are all familiar with your music in one form or another. So thank you so much for doing this for us today and getting up early and making the trip in New York City to be on the program.
I wish you all peace.
Well, thank you, Graham Nash. CSNY 1974 is the new CD DVD. Pick it up. My name is Larry London. Thanks to the whole crew for putting together today's program. This is Border Crossings on the VOA Music Mix Network.
Larry's on Twitter. Follow him at BCVOA.